Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Movie Geeks United, everybody, this Wednesday evening. Welcome, welcome. Tonight is our fall movie preview. It's a show that we look forward to every year. And my name is Jamie, and I'm joined by my co-hosts, Chris and Jerry, both. Hi, guys.
Hi.
Yo, what's up?
Yo.
Yo-ho.
It's a good night. We're going to get to our fall movie preview in just a moment. We got lots of people in the chat room, and I can imagine what they're anticipating and why they're here tonight, because we have a very special announcement to top off the show this evening. The second annual Carnival of Darkness Film Festival. That's why they're here. The film festival occurs on Friday, October 28th in Los Angeles, and it promises to feature a series of stunning horror short films from all over the world. And if you want to be the first to hear which films have been chosen, you've come to the right place, because here to announce these selected films and to tell us all about the upcoming Film Fest is Festival Director Alex Bram. And let me bring Alex up here. Alex, are you with us?
Hey, guys. How are you?
Hey, man. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. My name is Alex Bram, and I am a movie geek.
Well, that's good. You belong. You belong here. Tell me about this festival. This is the second Carnival of Darkness Film Festival. What inspired you to start it, and tell me the personality of the festival?
The personality of the festival, I kind of liked the idea of horror shorts and how a horror short cuts to the chase and gets to the action quickly. And just as a movie fan, I always liked horror shorts myself, so I thought that I'd want to create something to showcase the very best horror shorts from across the world. And this year I opened it up. We ran the film festival through Without a Box and basically opened it up to filmmakers across the world and got all kinds of amazing, amazing films.
When you look at the films that you were sent this year for consideration, what surprises you about that group of films? What were you most taken by?
Well, I have a fear about the state of horror in movies today, and my fear, so this isn't going to be positive, my fear is that horror is in a kind of a sickly condition. It's coughing up blood. You know, I don't think it's terminal. I think there is hope, but what I've noticed in going to horror movies for the past couple of years is that I'm not often frightened or scared. And my fear is that people are forgetting how to make a scary, engaging horror movie, and they're forgetting to kind of look at the basics. When I opened up Carnival of Darkness and got all this material from all these filmmakers, my fears were rather confirmed. I'm a horror filmmaker myself, and it's my career mission or objective to kind of do everything I can to bring horror back to, you know, those films like The Omen or The Exorcist or The Shining, quality, you know, films that were made with craft. So my goal in creating Carnival of Darkness was to shine the spotlight on these handful of filmmakers that have gone back and studied the masters and kind of concentrated on character development and just basically the basics of craft to create the scares. So
yeah. You know what, we talk a lot about the horror genre on the show, and when we talk about it, we always bring up the fact that it's the perfect genre to bring up to kind of illustrate the fears, the real world fears. You know, we're in wars and people are scared about terrorism and all that kind of stuff, and that has a way of seeping into our best horror films. Did you find any of that kind of content, social content, in the films that you looked at this year?
I surely did, and I mean, there was one film in particular, and this filmmaker will immediately know that that they're in, but that was a social commentary on big drug companies and things like that, and presented in a very artistic and actually surreal way, a film I really enjoyed. So yeah, I love all that kind of thing, and I think that horror is important, and like you were mentioning about how it trickles into social awareness, I think it's important for us to be paranoid and fearful and scared. It's a good thing for us humans to have. So I don't want horror to ever become a joke. And that's what I think has happened, is it's become kind of jokey or kind of, you know, a little goof. But if you look back at, you know, the folks in, let's say, The Omen, that family, that husband and wife in the movie The Omen, there's nothing, you know, too funny or jokey or wink wink at the camera. Those are real people in a tough spot.
Right.
Having marital
right.
problems.
Yeah, yeah. Which is a horror movie unto itself, the marital problems. okay, it takes place this year. It takes place on October 28th, and it takes place at the Los Angeles Film School, which is. Isn't that on Sunset? It's like across the street from the Arclight and the Amoeba Records, isn't it, if I remember correctly?
Yes, and it's a beautiful, you know, THX-authorized theater, so it's not going to be one of those film festivals that you go into somebody's basement and watch a shaky image. It's going to be state-of-the-art, you know, projection and sound and all that sort of thing, yeah.
Yeah, and you have films and you give out awards to the filmmakers. Tell me about the awards that you give out.
We have one Thrill Ride Award, and that will be announced live at the event. So I want to encourage these filmmakers to come and see the presentation, and also encourage them to bring their crews and family and all that kind of thing. So I'm not going to say who gets the Thrill Ride Award.
No. I don't want you to give it away.
it's going to be an actual award, and in addition to the screening of the films, we're also going to have something I'm very excited about, a horror experts panel.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very happy that I managed to assemble a panel that isn't, you know, like has-beens or people that, you know, were an extra on, you know, on Family Ties or something like that. So the panel this year is Paul Follet, who wrote and directed Grace, which I think is a very good modern horror film. Trent Haga, who wrote Dead Girl. Jeffrey Riddick, who wrote the first two Final Destination films. And then a promising up-and-coming new filmmaker called Alex Ferrari, who wrote Red Princess Blues. And what I'm excited about is I'm able to do exactly what I said I want to do as a career mission, is sort of shine a spotlight. You know, these guys are the next breed, you know, are the new breed, the next breed of horror. There are a couple of other films that I've seen recently that I was very happy to find, which weren't represented, but I pretty much got a representation of some current horror films that I really admire and like by getting this panel.
Right, exactly. That's a great panel. And that takes place that evening in between. It kind of divides up the film screenings that you guys are having?
Right. It's going to take place at 9 p.m., yes. The screenings will begin at 8. Actually, the doors open at 6:30. At 7, we're going to have some serious surprises and weird events. And then at 8, the films will begin to screen. 9 p.m. is the panel. 10 p.m. is film block number 2. And then we'll present the Thrill Ride Award. So that's kind of the layout of what we're going to do.
Okay, so tonight is exciting because you are unveiling which filmmakers got selected and which films got selected to play at the festival. But you also have some runners-up that you wanted to give a shout-out to. I was wondering if we could announce some of the runners-up first.
Oh, okay. Well, so in my hundreds of films that I watched, most of them, you know, in American Idol, how sometimes the people will come on there and they shouldn't be singing or trying to sing or anything like that. So just like that, a majority of the films were along those lines. So, however, there were a couple of films that didn't make it into the final cut, but which I really loved and admired and wanted to just give them a little shout out and encouragement, because they didn't make it mainly because of the, let's say, time constraints or one little thing or another. So do you want me to just go ahead and say who they are?
Please go ahead. These are the ones that we want to give a special shout out to that aren't the final 12, but deserve special mention.
Right, exactly. Okay, so the first one is Imaginary by Katrina Frederick. She's the writer-director on that. Very beautiful. I'll tell you what, I'm going to tell you what these two films are, and then without specifically saying, you know, there are certain things that would disqualify you from my festival, at least, and so I wanted to talk about that. So the first film is Imaginary by Katrina Frederick. The second film is Billy Baxter and the Mystery of Dr. Amazo. And they somehow got great production design. It was a great film. I believe that this filmmaker's name is Patrick Flaherty. I never know how to pronounce that. Billy Baxter and the Mystery of Dr. Amazo. I think it was he's either a young filmmaker or part of a school program, but he really created I felt like I was watching a DreamWorks, Steven Spielberg, you know, Bob Zemeckis kind of flick. And it just wasn't exactly right for the festival, but I want to let that filmmaker know that although I can't pronounce his name, I really admire the film a lot.
Yeah.
So a lot of the things that I saw, I guess the biggest thing that disqualified folks or was the acting. And unfortunately, a lot of times filmmakers think like, oh, well, you know, my Uncle Bruce, he's a cop. I'll get him to play the cop in the movie. And, you know, those kind of shortcuts oftentimes don't work out. So my first kind of tip or recommendation to up-and-coming filmmakers is casting is everything. Don't scrimp on the casting. And I saw a lot of films where everything was great, you know, great lighting, photography, great story, and just the acting, you know, took me out of it. And I see
exactly
that in features, by the way.
Yeah, it is in features, too, yeah. Okay,
a lot.
So the 12 films that have been selected to play at the Carnival of Darkness 2 Film Festival are, just go ahead and name them one by one, I guess.
Here we go. So the first one, in no particular order, is 8 Butterflies, an amazing, beautiful piece of art by Nick Narcisco. Next film is Paradox. Jeremy Hakoun is the filmmaker there. Next film is Third Shift by director Bruce Guido. Next film is Simone. The director there was Jutes Fragal. And I actually just invited that film in because I wanted to have Jutes Fragal in my life. I mean, how can you not? So Jutes Fragal was invited in. Then Drew Daywalt, his film Bedfellows, is in. And we have Silent City, this person, Rari Robinson. Has actually been nominated for an Academy Award for Best Short Animated Film in 2002, though. But so we have an Academy Award nominee as part of the roster here. And then finally, Red Princess Blues by Alex Ferrari, who is my homie from Miami, if I can say homie.
Okay, so those are all the films and the filmmakers who have been selected to participate in the Carnival of Darkness Film Festival. And the film festival takes place October 28th at the Los Angeles Film School, which is 6363 Sunset Boulevard is where that's located. And the doors open at 6:30. Expect big surprises at 7, so show up early. If you're attending, it's $10 for general admission. And you can get tickets online and read all about the festival at carnivalofdarkness.net. And we'll post that in our chat room. And just to let the everyone listening live know, if you missed any part of this announcement, our show is available for replay right after it goes off the air in about an hour and 15 minutes or so. So you can hear it all over again if you'd like. I'm excited for you, Alex. It sounds like a great festival.
Thank you so much, you guys. I'll be listening to your guys' podcast on Brian De Palma next week because he is one of my heroes.
Yeah, ours too, man. We're excited about it too. I really appreciate the time, but I appreciate you you choosing Movie Geeks United to make the announcement tonight.
Thanks so much, guys.
All right, buddy. Have a good one. Bye-bye, Alex.
Bye.
Okay, that's Alex Bram, the festival's Carnival of Darkness. It's the second year of the festival, October 28th in Los Angeles Film School. All right, guys, how are you?
Doing really well. How about you?
Good.
I'm chipper.
Okay.
Yeah, man, you're very excited.
Let me tell you something. It's actually been a terrible day, so I am forcing myself to be chipper.
Okay, well, you're doing a good job, man. You had us fooled, so.
Yeah. Speaking of chipper, are we chipper about the fall movie season in general?
Yeah, it's exciting. There's a lot of, if you look at the schedule, there's some of the bigger directors, some of our biggest and best A-list directors, kind of absent for the most part. But, there's a lot of the, sort of the juniors, as I call them, in there. A lot of the guys that I love, but not the not the Spielbergs, not the Coppolas and the Scorseses, not any of those guys. But the second crew, you know?
Yeah.
They're there.
Which last year was the opposite, right? I mean, last year we had the giants, the Tarantinos, and the I can't think of who else, but giants.
we had the biggest, you had the biggest one, Cameron. So
yeah, true.
I mean,
and that's our giant right there.
Yeah, it is our giant. Yep,
our giant. It's our sequel to the Billy Crystal movie.
Oh God! Oh my God! I think everyone has forgotten about that until now.
I really pulled that up. Speaking of giant, I interviewed Chewbacca today, just to let you guys know.
Oh, Peter Mayhew? Yeah.
Yes. He's going to be part of our Star Wars show. So.
All right. Cool.
Yeah. That dude's 7'4". Do you know that?
I met him. I met him in person once, and he is indeed 7'4".
Okay. Here is our first movie that we'll be discussing. We just have a couple of trailers tonight because we got a lot of ground to cover in a limited amount of time. This film opens October 1st.
I need to do something substantial in order to get the attention of the clubs.
Why?
Because they're exclusive and fun, and they lead to a better life.
People want to go on the internet and check out their friends, so why not build a website that offers that friends, pictures, profiles? I'm talking about taking the entire social experience of college and putting it online.
That got 2,200 hits within 2 hours?
22,000.
This idea is potentially worth millions of dollars.
Millions? You stole our website.
They're saying we stole the Facebook.
I know what it said.
So did we?
$1 million isn't cool. You know what's cool? $1 billion.
You're going to get left behind.
It's moving faster than any of us ever imagined.
Get left behind.
But sue him in federal court.
I can't wait to stand over your shoulder and watch you write as a check.
You guys were the inventors of Facebook.
Invented Facebook.
Is there anything that you need to tell me?
Your actions could have permanently destroyed everything I've been working on.
We have been working on.
Do you like being a joke? Do you want to go back to that?
Mark!
It's our time.
Breaching security, violating copyright, violating individual privacy.
Your best friend is suing you for $600 million.
As for the charges, I believe I deserve some recognition from this board.
I'm sorry?
Yes.
I don't understand.
Which part?
Certainly. definitely one of the best trailers of recent years, as we've discussed before on the show. Jerry, if this were directed by anyone other than somebody on the caliber of David Fincher, would you be interested in it still?
Any of the rebels on the back lot, yeah, I would be. But I think he's the perfect, of those six directors, I think he's the perfect one to do it. We had an interesting conversation about this movie the other night on another show, The Things I Didn't Learn in Film School. Paul Bassetti brought up some good points. It's an odd choice for a movie, because the story isn't even nearly done. We're still in the first, maybe the second act at best. Zuckerberg's life is still so young. It's what he's done so far that's amazing or outrageous, depending how you look at it. But we haven't seen – this is a movie waiting to be told, in a sense, the Ivy League at the dawn of the 21st century, this young generation of billionaires to become. And I can't think of anyone other than Fincher to really bring it. I was worried when I first heard about it because I thought, oh, my God, Sorkin and Fincher are going to make some glowing piece about Zuckerberg. And then when you see the trailer, you realize, no, this is not some puff piece. This is a real it could be a film that's a dawn of a movie saying how stupid we are to giving away all our privacy.
Yeah.
I really do think it's going to come on that side, maybe.
Privacy is part of it. And then I'm curious what their take on social media as a form is, you know, what that means to society, what that means for the way we communicate with one another. I'm wondering if it'll go into that, because I find that technology, you know, you see the commercials and everything when they have the video phone or when they show phone company commercials, and
right.
It's a way to connect with your family and that kind of thing. I find that technology actually puts up an even broader border between people connecting in a way. But do you think that Fincher, what other kind of themes do you think Fincher was attracted to in the material, Chris, or do you hope he was attracted to?
Yeah, I think obviously that it is going to go into that, the way that social media has affected us. I mean, this story, we all know that this story takes place, five, 6 years ago or something like that, and really Facebook has only truly become known to our mothers and our grandmothers and our, you know, old ladies that worked with us and stuff like that in the last 2 years or so. But the same thing that is appealing to those old women and grandmothers today and a year ago is the same thing that appealed to college kids 6 years ago. It's appealing for the same reasons, and it was instantly appealing for all those reasons, this idea that we could connect with everyone that we know. It's just that young kids in college caught onto it first, and your grandmother just caught onto it last week. So, I think that they will go into those themes, and that's what I want to hear, and that's enough for me, the fact that it's David Fincher doing an Aaron Sorkin script about the beginnings of this amazing social media, and touching on how that social media affects the world. That's plenty for me right there. And I'm also happy to see, Jesse Eisenberg, working with David Fincher, working in a little bit meatier part than he's gotten in the last couple of years, in a high-profile part.
Yeah.
I like him a lot, so.
Yeah. It's got a neat-looking, eclectic young cast. I mean, Justin Timberlake plays a major role. Andrew Garfield, who, when I read reviews of the movie, they all single out Andrew Garfield, who just signed on to play the new Spider-Man, and they say this is his coming out. This is his breakthrough in the Social Network. He really comes through loud and clear in this movie. So this is a movie that all three of us, it's on our tops for the rest of the year, definitely. Also released on that day, October 1st, Case 39, which is a Renee Zellweger, Bradley Cooper movie that's been shelved for quite a long time. That they just decided maybe counter programming with that cast. I guess, is it romantic comedy or something?
I thought it was a thriller.
I think it is a thriller. Yeah, it's a thriller.
Thing.
But it's probably not too thrilling if it's been shelved.
Yeah, I mean, when a movie like that, now there's sometimes there are good movies, the movies have gotten great buzz that are shelved for no apparent reason, And then there are others like this, which I think was supposed to come out the first week of this year, I think, or at least sometime in January, and then it disappears from the release schedule. And then they figure, oh, let's release it the same day as The Social Network, and I think doesn't also Let Me In come out the same day?
No, it comes out the next week. I'm about to
Oh, they pushed it back. Good. That was a very smart move on their part.
And then also on October 1st is our buddy Adam Green, writer-director. He's coming out with Hatchet 2 in limited release, and it just got an X rating, so they're going unrated. And AMC
wow.
Theaters is releasing it exclusively. It's like it's a really bold step. They're releasing it wide throughout their theaters without a rating. Because usually that's
wow.
the kiss of death for movies, yeah. So they signed an exclusive deal with him. So October 8th, we have a few movies, one of which looks really intriguing. It came out of Sundance with Ryan Reynolds. It's called Buried.
Mm, okay.
Have you seen the new trailer to this? There's something very Hitchcockian, Saul Bassian about the poster and the marketing
mm-hmm.
for this movie. I think I would be interested in seeing it just to see how they pull off a guy buried underground for 90 minutes and the camera stays with him the whole time.
Well, the whole thing is you've got to get an actor who's likable, and I don't know anyone who doesn't like Ryan Reynolds. Like, even people who don't, like, hey, I don't really like his movies very much, but I always like Ryan Reynolds, and for the past, seems like the past 10 years I've been waiting for Ryan Reynolds to start making good movies. Hopefully this will be it.
Yeah. Jerry, you get a positive feeling about it?
I get a positive feeling, and I mean, and Chris is absolutely right about Ryan Reynolds. I think he was perfect, though, in Adventureland. I thought he played that part perfectly. But that wasn't a starring role. But, yeah, I think this could be the one that really puts him over the top.
Yeah. Also that day, Let Me In. A movie a movie that might be decent if there wasn't a guaranteed exceptional version of it made just a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
You know, if you didn't have that comparison to throw in. But to be honest, most American audiences won't know the comparison because they haven't seen the original. So it might not matter to them.
It might not.
That's right. And this movie is for them. Like, that's who it's for. So really, if you're a fan of the original movie, have zero expectations, and that includes, I think, all three of us on this show. You know, you really shouldn't have any expectations. I saw the preview for this today when I went to the movies. And, you know, there's lots of changes that are apparent just from the trailer. So please, like, leave your expectations at the door if you're a fan of the original. The little girl's got the, like, bright vampire eyes in this movie, you know, like with the cat slit in them,
mm-hmm.
you know. It doesn't look anything like the, I mean, it looks like the original, but they are going to Americanize this thing. The cop seems to, the Ilias Kodias character is the cop. He's got a beefed up role because we Americans, we love our tough cops in movies. It's not the same thing. So,
yeah, are themes that are lifted directly, though. I could tell.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, but there is the thing with the cop does looks like something we added in.
Well, the major difference is going to be tonally. The movie, I can pretty much guarantee you, the movie probably won't be as cerebral. It definitely won't be as patient and take its time and be as atmospheric and moody and subtle as the original movie. You know?
Subtle? Oh, my God, this thing has got so much blood and gore, and not even a lot, but more violence in the trailer than I remember from the original movie. There's a lot of stuff that was implied in the original, but you can't do that with, you know, in our country. It has to be shown.
Which is absolutely
and quite vividly.
The major difference. The major difference between these two versions. So what
you'll be able to tell most in the final scene. Not the final scene, but the final confrontation from the original movie, which was, it seemed very, very violent, except you really didn't see anything, maybe a little bit of blurry, and then a little bit at the end. I guarantee you that will be, you know, like a 9-minute scene in this version. And I like Matt Reeves. I like Cloverfield.
Yeah.
And I sort of understand this whole thing of, oh, we want to do a remake for my follow-up movie, I guess. I sort of understand that, except his original movie was pretty much a remake of Godzilla, so I don't know what's up. But he seems to be a talented guy. But I don't know. This one, I don't even know if I'm going to watch it because, frankly, it's not for me. It's not for fans of the original.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you think he also is kind of slumming it? Because in Cloverfield, one of the beautiful things about Cloverfield was it's also a thing where you heard a lot of it. You didn't show that much, but you heard. There's more. It's what you didn't see that was actually quite chilling in Cloverfield.
Yeah,
and here
I don't think we're
going to
get that.
He's getting...
And actually...
Yeah.
the least effective part of Cloverfield is when you see everything,
mm-hmm.
is when you see the complete monster full
mm-hmm.
of full view, for me. Also on that day is a movie that's getting a lot of great buzz. We talked about it previously on the show, but we've never played any clips or trailer for it. Here's the trailer for Stone.
Joe Creasy.
I prefer Stone.
So, like a nickname? That's,
That's what my people call me. Can we talk straight? You gonna help me out, or what?
Just talk, that's all. And then maybe we both get what we want, okay?
All right! Free man walking there!
I'd like to stay on my currents if I can see him through the review. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Talk about what got you here. You want to tell me about that?
It's right there in front of you. Why you want to talk about that again?
Because now you're mine.
Do you write what you're going to write?
Let's just
get on with it. I see you outside before you see me.
Stone! You want to walk out of here? You will go through me. You got it?
Yes.
Then sit down.
I need you to
get with him in person.
I would do anything for you, baby. You know that.
Mabry, I'm Stoney's wife.
You're here to see your husband?
I don't want you to get your hopes up.
I just want him home.
Jack,
hold
on. I was just wondering when we could get together.
Look, I admire that you love your husband and you want to do what's right for him.
I do love my husband. And all I'm asking you is for a chance to help you see him in a different light. Can I persuade you?
Comes naturally, it's inbred in us.
Bless the Lord.
You lose your place.
Jack said.
You call him Jack?
Sure.
Why do you get to walk around free and I don't?
I wasn't convicted of a crime.
You never did anything bad.
Nobody can know about this.
And you scared to die?
I think it's some kind of play acting.
See, both economy? Okay.
Did you tell him about us?
There's something you want to say to me.
Look at me. I love you, Jack.
Don't listen to him.
Can I do good?
Okay, that's the trailer to a movie called Stone. It's directed by John Curran, who did We Don't Live Here Anymore and The Painted Veil, and it's actually getting great reviews. It's with Robert De Niro and Edward Norton and Mila Jovovich, and Edward Norton plays an arsonist who's in prison, and he tries to manipulate his parole officer that's played by De Niro to secure his parole, and he does that by using his wife, who tries to spark an affair with the parole officer. And they say it's a very surprising movie. So this is one that might be kind of a sleeper kind of film for me that I'm really looking forward to. Bottom, the most impressive part of the reviews I've read of it is they say that De Niro's back, that it's a great De Niro performance. Has this been on
your
radar, Chris?
Yeah, I saw the preview for the first time about a month ago, and I gotta say, like, I'm always... strange to me how much Ed Norton plays a guy behind bars, from Primal Fear to American History X to Rounders. I think he even goes to jail in Fight Club and maybe the Incredible Hulk movie for a minute, and now this and Stone. Like, this guy, like, goes to fucking jail more than anybody. But it always pretty good results. Like, we don't remember The Painted Veil that much, but when this guy goes to jail, it usually makes for a pretty good movie. So,
when he's a free man, he's very uninteresting.
Yeah, really, like, nobody wants to see him, running around with Ben Stiller chasing after Jenna Elfman, but lock him up and let him get raped by the Klan, and we're all interested. No, this looks really good, and, you know, I mean, these guys worked together before on The Score, and that was not, you know, it was an interesting movie, but it wasn't, like, too terribly memorable, but I remember that even during the interviews, De Niro was really taken with Ed Norton, and, you know, of course, everyone loves Ed Norton. This movie looks really good. It's interesting to see Mila Jovovich sort of starting to take roles that don't involve her blowing zombies' heads off, because She's always a pretty good actress, and then she was just got caught, like, making really shitty movies for about 6 years there. So
yeah.
I'm glad to see her back. It looks really interesting.
She was in a movie with Adrian Brody a couple of years ago. I think it was called Dummy, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, yeah.
And I thought that was quite different. That was outside, like, the Resident Evil or God knows what other movies she's been in. She's been in so many of those and spin-offs of those and rip-offs of those movies. But, yeah, it would be. That's another thing about this movie, and I didn't hear about this till a couple of days ago, and I think it's good to see her trying to branch out as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Stone opens up October 8th. The same day as I Spit on Your Grave, the remake, which is also unrated, as it should be, I guess. But I have no take on that movie. Either one of you have any?
I don't really, you know, I keep reading about it or hearing about it, but I can't say it's not something I'm dying to see. I mean,
well, if you remake something awful.
Yeah, yeah.
you can only improve upon it. Maybe. But there's actually several documentaries that I'm looking forward to this year because I haven't seen the Tillman story yet.
That I don't want to see.
Yeah, and there's definitely a couple of others that are on my radar. But this one's on the top of the list, and this is going to be carried at the New York Film Festival, I believe, which this year Movie Geeks United is going to cover the New York Film Festival. Movie Geeks United got in to the festival in the person of our loyal listener, Dean, and he'll be reporting back on the screenings throughout the festival for us. But
good.
Here is the, some Movie Geeks got into the festival, dude.
Yeah, unfortunately, he's going to the festival from 1933, though, so.
Okay.
I love it. I just love it. It's great. I love when the three of us are together.
Here is the three, the 33. Here's the trailer to the documentary that's on the top of my list this year. It's called Inside Job.
All right.
From the director of No End in Sight.
All right. Good call.
Share prices continued to tumble.
Lehman Brothers was forced to declare itself bankrupt.
The largest single point drop.
The regulators, they had the power to do every case that I made when I was state attorney general. They just didn't want to.
We are watching this tsunami coming.
They were having massive private gains at public loss. The financial engineer built dreams. When those dreams turn out to be nightmares, other people pay for it.
Bear Stearns, Goldman Sachs, Lehman Brothers, they knew what was happening.
What do you think about selling securities which your own people think are crap? Does that bother you
as a hypothetical?
No, this is real.
What do you think of Wall Street incomes these days?
Excessive.
By 1986, he was making millions of dollars and thought it was because he was smart.
Chuck Prince famously said, "We have to dance until the music stops." Actually, music had stopped already when he said that.
At some point, I used the word Armageddon.
These people are risk takers, they're impulsive. I see a lot of cocaine use, prostitution.
So did these guys know that they were doing something dangerous?
I think they did.
I don't hear confessions.
What can we believe in? There's nothing we can trust anymore.
We had a whole group of people looking at this for whatever reason.
You can't be serious. If you would have looked, you would have found things.
It's a Wall Street government.
Why do you think there isn't a more systematic investigation being undertaken?
Because then you would find the culprits.
I don't believe I have to discuss that with you.
You come to us today telling us, "We're sorry, we won't do it again. Trust us." Well, I have some people in my constituency that actually robbed some of your banks. And they say the same thing.
I never heard him mention those things.
Could we turn this off for a second?
Inside Job, which opens New York October 8th and L.A. on the 15th, and I'm sure it'll be available elsewhere in the weeks following. So this is about the financial crisis. It's kind of a – which, you know, capitalism, I think, was basically how we got here more than anything else. And this seems to be in the eye of the storm, this
right.
Inside Job. And what's surprising to me is documentarians outside of Michael Moore, obviously, because he's such a personality unto himself, they tend to stay invisible in their films. But you actually hear – the filmmaker, the director, whose name escapes me at this moment. Actually, he speaks and challenges the people he's interviewing off camera. At one point, basically calling the gentleman a liar.
Well, good for him.
In front of the camera. Charles Ferguson is the director producer.
Yeah. You had said, both of you actually, a couple years ago when we were talking about documentaries, had brought up a good point. You had said that documentaries had basically filled the void or taken the place of what the nightly news and actually the 24-hour news cycle should be doing, investigative reporting, because that's no longer going on. What we have basically is ideological opinion pieces almost every night at this point. And so these guys have filled the are filling a gap that's sadly needed in a democracy, so they're doing it. Now, this is a very, you know, absorbing trailer. I saw it a couple of weeks ago in the theater, and people were, you know, up in arms. But the question is, what we've just witnessed in this trailer, what we've witnessed the last two or three years, amount to are really, I would put as war crimes. I don't care who you are, I don't, and if that's exaggeration or not. Do you think some good will come out if enough people see this film? What I'm afraid of is this film will come to the local art house theater for a week or two and then disappear.
I don't know. You know, I don't know that people can be any more upset into action than they already are.
I mean, they are.
People don't know what to do. I mean, so unless you have a movie that says, okay, this is how you fight back.
Right.
All you can do is just watch it and get more frustrated and shake your head, but at least have an understanding of the caliber of people that are in charge of this fiasco, you know?
Okay. Yeah. Not only the caliber of people, but also what the fuck happened. Because, like, I swear, if you walk up to 10 people and ask them to give you just a sort of, you know, get just a four-minute explanation of the entire financial crisis and how all the cards fell, 9 out of 10 of them would not be able to give you a satisfactory answer to that question. And I might be one of them, because there are things with these credit default swaps and all this kind of stuff, I can't explain it to you. I mean, I don't understand it. There's economists that can't really explain it to you. It's very, very complicated stuff. I mean, these guys are bringing in mathematicians to dupe investors out of money and stuff like that. So capitalism was an interesting movie, but it would touch more on the emotional side of it, which is what Michael Moore does, and that's great. But sometimes we need a movie like this, or like No End in Sight, or like Enron, the smartest guys in the room, that just lays all the cards out on the table and says, here's what happened. I did not understand Enron, the entire thing, until I saw that documentary. And so did that documentary change anything in the world? No, not really, but it did change. For me, I understand the thing now, because they laid it out in layman's terms. Hopefully this movie will do that, because we need that with this situation. I do anyway.
Yeah, I agree with Chris there, but I think if you follow Reed Paul Krugman twice a week in the New York Times, you begin and end your week on the most depressing news in the world, essentially. But he has a firm understanding. The only problem is, you know, no one wants to, in the administration, want to take him on and actually give him a job, because I think they're all scared shitless of him. But and he's a world famous economist, Nobel Prize winning economist, and he has been very good with the narrative of this. But it's just interesting. I just wonder, you know, we talk about, you know, movies that can change the world or something, and I'm not saying this could, but it is important, I think, because it's right, you know, 9 out of 10 of those people won't give you a full explanation, but I think between the three of us, we could give a pretty, each of us has our own take or part of it that we do understand what did go wrong in certain segments. Certainly people who could not afford, not in a million years, could pay off those mortgages. There's just no way. That was part of it. It was bad lending. It was companies such as Goldman Sachs and Lehman Brothers selling basically junk.
But like Chris said, this is basically Michael Moore's was – it showed it from the point of view of the victims as much as an academic kind of review of how we got here. I mean, this is in the middle of it, and it's taking the heat to the actual perpetrators, which is encouraging. On the 15th, we have Conviction, which looks TV movie to me. It really does. Which is the Hillary Swank.
Oh, yeah.
Sam Rockwell.
Sam Rockwell's enough for me to see it. that's all I need. I don't need anything else.
Well, it's he's in prison, and it's Hillary Swank is his sister, who makes
I think
her
his
life,
sister, yeah.
Yeah, his life's goal to get him out of prison. Cause
there are three movies about prison this year.
It's directed by Tony Goldwyn. You know, the actor, he's made some decent
yeah.
films as a director.
Mm-hmm.
Also on that day, Jackass 3D, which...
Hell,
I'm sorry,
yeah. Yeah, man.
I've never really been about the Jackass movies. I don't like the gross stuff. But that
it's
trailer...
Fun, though.
That
fun.
Trailer is funny. I mean,
mm-hmm.
I laughed several times out loud in that
yeah.
trailer.
Mm-hmm.
And to see it in
3D,
you know it'll be popular
yeah.
opening weekend.
Yeah.
Those movies are two of the best times just laughing for 2 hours in a theater that I ever had.
There you go.
I haven't gone back to watch either one of them, but I remember going to see them when they came out, and I laughed my ass off. I will be going to see this probably
oh,
on opening weekend.
Definitely.
Well, we'll hear you guys' full review on the 17th, the following Sunday. Also on that day is Red, which has a really impressive cast. Bruce
yeah.
Willis, Helen Mirren, Richard Dreyfuss, and Malkovich is in it. And
Ernest Borgnine.
yeah. Speaking of laughing during a trailer, I laughed at John Malkovich's appearance in that trailer.
Mm-hmm.
He just looks manic and just
yes, he does.
Fantastically funny.
Mm-hmm.
So that I'm sure they want that to be the big tentpole. And ironically, for that day, for that weekend, ironically, Jackass 3D might beat it.
Yeah.
Oh, I'd say it definitely will. Absolutely.
Yeah.
But they're both high up there for me. I mean, but that, I'm glad to hear Chris is a big Jackass fan, too, because those movies are hysterical. It's just,
yeah.
like, I guess you could say living vicariously through others is
yeah.
how you would view those. That's how I
yeah,
view
cause
them.
Yeah, because I don't want to do that.
No, I don't either. It's very...
On the 22nd, we've got Paranormal Activity 2, which I know we've discussed in the past, recent past.
Mm-hmm.
Will the buzz about the first film, because it was so new, or it felt so new, it felt like an event, will that die before Paranormal, is that dead? Will
yeah.
Paranormal Activity 2 not be able to ride that?
I think it's like Blair Witch 2.
Yeah, we're looking at a Book of Shadows situation
mm-hmm.
here. Like, this is, there's no way. Like, there's no way this is good that people are going to, because most of the people that I talk to be honest, were not crazy about that movie. You know, and I'm one of them, I got to say. Like, I didn't think it was that great. I don't get it. Maybe I should have seen it with a theater. I saw it on DVD. But I think it's dead. I think it's gone. People, you know, it was a one-trick pony, and good for them. They made some money, and a lot of people liked it, but no. I don't think this is going to be successful at all.
It's a good calling card for the director, and he's got another movie coming out, but I think it's, I just can't help, but it's just, like you said, the Book of Shadows analogy seems to be, unless I'm missing something and I've seen the trailer for the second one, it looks like the exact same thing, only there's, I think, a child in this one. So...
Well, those are always scary.
Those are scary, but, you know, it could... Is this going up against Saw 3D?
just you wait, Chris. Those are scary.
Yeah. Yeah, not the ones that are ghosts, just children in general.
Right.
Yeah.
It's going up against Hereafter, which, you know, is another supernatural movie.
Mm-hmm.
Clint Eastwood directing a supernatural movie, thriller, starring Matt Damon. And it's no trailer yet, and it's premiering at the New York Film Festival, but it seems like a very different movie for Eastwood, and I'm curious to see how his laid-back, relaxed directing style, which you can feel in every movie he does, works in a thriller genre.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he described it himself as a chick flick that guys won't mind going to. That's how he described it. Or actually, I think his exact words were that a guy won't want to stab himself with a pen in the knee or something like that. So, you know, Matt Damon plays a psychic in this movie. That's why I'm so interested. Like, the details of this movie have really not been leaked too much. It's all very vague, and the trailer hasn't come out yet. We should be seeing that very soon.
Yeah, I would imagine any day.
Eastwood still has plenty of credit with me. I know his last couple... have not been, you know, they're not the Mystic Rivers and the Million Dollar Babies and the Unforgivens, but he still has a lot of credit as far as I'm concerned. So.
Yeah, I mean, I have to hand it to him. I was not, like, dying to see Invictus, but when I saw it, I got really wrapped up in the story, and from the trailer, I didn't think it looked, I think it looked rather ordinary, and I got to hand it to him. He really made a really, really absorbing, powerful movie, and
yeah,
I was not expecting anything from
it. I liked it too. I liked it too, and I thought it was the perfect, I thought it was the perfect, distilled kind of little story to represent the larger themes that they were going for.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, the problem was everybody had the same reaction as the three of us. Immediately, they didn't want to see it because it didn't look interesting.
Yeah.
It was pretty good.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. It was really,
Our last trailer for the night. Here is another film that releases that day, October 22nd. I'm glad it's finally being released. It was another Sundance film from a longtime writer-director of The West Wing. It's called Company Men. Here's a peek.
Cool.
What's going on?
The company's consolidating divisions. Difficult decisions had to be made in areas where redundancies surfaced.
You're firing me? 3,000 jobs?
They were good people, Jim.
Hell, it's a business, not a charity.
I've always told you what I thought, right or wrong, and this is wrong. Late for a meeting.
Got one kid in college, another one going in the fall.
I won't go back to a factory floor. I'll take an AK-47 to this place first.
Mr. Walker. I speak here for a moment. This got thrown off the course, the club.
You're playing golf? Getting your Porsche detailed?
I need to look successful.
Hi, Sally. Thanks for not returning any of my phone calls. If you do return my call, I would love to know why you fired me without any notice.
You cowardly witch.
See, otherwise she never calls you back. Feels good, though.
We can do the honors.
Dear God, please help my dad find a job so he won't be unhappy all the time.
Okay.
You know, things get tough. You can always use some extra help this winter.
Easy work, huh, Bobby? Pretty much like moving cost reports from the inbox to the outbox.
I hate your brother.
We can't do this.
I'm a 37-year-old unemployed loser.
You have Drew and Costin and me. You have me.
We can make something here. Start out with a crazy plan.
Start slow. See if it'll grow.
You just take that job. You're a terrible cop.
We'll win.
Why?
Because I have faith, courage, enthusiasm. I will win.
All right, Company Men. It's about three men that get laid off, very successful kind of businessmen that find themselves victims of the Depression. And Ben Affleck, what distinguishes the movie, first of all, John Wells, I believe, is the writer-director, and he's a great talent. This is a feature film from him, coming from TV. But what also distinguishes it is the cast. Ben Affleck, Chris Cooper, Tommy Lee Jones, Kevin Costner. So I'm looking forward to this. I think it'll be a good film.
Mm-hmm.
It does look good, but unfortunately it's the worst kind of trailer, which is, like every major beat of the movie is given out in the trailer. Like Affleck loses his job. He goes to work for his brother-in-law. Chris Cooper is starting to go crazy. Shit's falling apart for Affleck. He's messing up things with his wife. Oh, but he's got another opportunity maybe with Tommy Lee Jones, and maybe things are going to work out after all. Like, I know every beat of this movie already. And it hasn't even come out, you know what I mean? Like, the trailer's just getting ridiculous with the revealing of the information. Am I the only one that feels that way?
No, I think they get scared. I think they get scared. How do we market a guy, a movie about a few older and middle-aged kind of men that lose their job? How do we convince people to pay for a movie that have lost their job?
Yeah, that's a good – Jamie actually brings up a really good point, although it does – look good, and it looks like Ben Affleck is going to have a really good year if the town looks as good as it does. And this certainly looks good, and the buzz from Sundance was incredible. So, I understand what Chris is saying. Though you do, it's like one of these trailers where you feel like you do see the whole movie. And there are movies that we're probably going to talk about later that do the exact same thing. But it does look. I got to say, the cast and everything makes it very appealing. The combination of those actors.
A movie that has no worries about giving too much away comes out the following week, October 29th, my birthday. But it's not really a great present for me because it's Saw 3D.
But it's the last one, hopefully.
Yes. Come on.
Yeah.
I think that's really all we need to say about that.
Yeah.
Friday, November 5th, we have Todd Phillips' new comedy, Robert Downey Jr., Zach Galifianakis, Due Date, which the trailer has been up for this for a little while.
Totally underwhelming to me.
Yeah, the trailer didn't really impress me, but I'm kind of fine with that, because if they put all the laughs in the trailer, which I didn't really laugh in the trailer. Maybe
I'm
hoping
that
promises that the film will carry, a lot more laughs. And be
that's what you hope for in a movie like
Maybe put one laugh in the trailer, though.
Yeah, no, I remember it was like, do you think it's like School for Scoundrels kind of, or Starsky and Hutch? You know, he had Old School, and then Todd Phillips did those two, which are underwhelming. Then he does The Hangover, and then are we looking at another something that has this, Downey and Galifianakis, but... And who knows? It could be. Yeah, I agree with you. The trailer, when you have to use a dog so much in a trailer, as Paul Bassetti said the other night, I think Paul and Francis said, that's trouble if you have to use the dog that much.
Yeah, I don't think it's fair to refer to Zach Galifianakis as a dog.
No, I wasn't. I was talking about the
French
bulldog. The French bulldog I was talking about. But
I was making a joke.
I know. There is a movie that I think is very interesting that we didn't talk about coming out October 8th, and that's Nowhere Boy.
Yeah.
With Aaron Johnson as a young John Lennon. Aaron Johnson, who is, a lot of people know as Kick-Ass, plays John Lennon in this 1950s set film. I saw the trailer finally for this like a couple weeks ago, and it looks really good.
What's the story with that? Has that been released in the UK for a long time now? Because I've been hearing about this for a while.
Yeah, I don't know if it's been released, but I just thought it looked really promising. The guy, just looked like a really strong performance from Johnson. And it just looks something that I would definitely go check out.
Yeah, he's getting great notices. Mm-hmm. I mean, I read him last year. But Due Date has a great, Danny McBride's in it, Juliet Lewis, who has a few movies. I mean, she's in that Conviction movie, too, I think, Juliet Lewis. Danny McBride's in it, Jamie Foxx, Alan Arkin.
Downey Jr. and Galifianakis too. I mean, that would pretty much. I feel comfortable going to see a movie just with those two. That there will be.
Juliet Lewis.
Juliet
Lewis. That's awesome. I'll be there. I mean, have you guys heard her CD that she released earlier this year?
Yeah, it's really awful. But,
really? I love it. I think it's great. I mean, great. I just think it's great that she's doing something else besides playing the nut job in the movie. So.
Also on that day, we got another Sundance film, Welcome to the Rileys, that got good notices, particularly for the performance of Kristen Stewart, who's on the rise. I mean, definitely Twilight's made her popular, but as an actress, she's getting notices for those movies that she does on the outside. She's really kind of she's revealing the kind of actress that she wants to be with choices like The Runaways and this one, I think.
Mm-hmm.
It'll
be
a big relief to her, I think, and to her fans, and I'm one of them, when the Twilight series is done. Unfortunately, they're going to drag that out for like the next 2.5 years.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Danny Boyle's new film comes out November 5th as well. It stars James Franco and Lizzie Kaplan. It's about a mountain climber who becomes trapped under a boulder while, I can't pronounce that word, by canyoneering alone. Mm-hmm. In Utah, and resorts to desperate measures in order to survive. Danny Boyle is always a very eclectic director. His films are always interesting and different, and very, very versatile. He tackles different things. He doesn't make the same movie twice, really.
No, although this trailer feels a lot like the trailer to The Beach, which is a movie that I loved, and I think this trailer looks really interesting. And when I heard that he was making a movie about this story, I was like, wow, how are they going to make that into a movie? And it looks like something I'd like to see. So, and James Franco, I really don't think we've seen the best of James Franco yet. I think that guy is going to stun us all with a couple performances.
Well, he does
the next couple
everything.
Years.
I mean, did you read that interview with him in New York Magazine a couple of weeks ago?
No.
He does everything. I mean, this guy is just like, I don't know, he doesn't sleep. I mean, he just does everything. So
I really
want to
see his Saturday Night Live his Saturday Night Live documentary. I wanted to see that.
Yeah.
That he directed. And, you know, he just went back to General Hospital last year.
Yeah.
So that's great.
I mean, he's just all over the place.
Doug Liman's Fair Game opens in limited release on November 5th as well. This is the Valerie Plame story. Naomi Watts and Sean Penn. I've seen a couple of scenes from this, and I've heard that it's a good, solid work. And I'll see anything with Sean Penn in it, just to enjoy his performance prowess. All right, let's go to the next week, November 12th.
You didn't even want to hear what we had to say.
November 12th. Morning Glory comes out, the Harrison Ford comedy. It's like a new version of Working Girl, I think you were saying. Something similar to that.
Last week,
Jerry.
Yeah, I mean, I think that when he does those, like that Working Girl, when he's in it, I mean, it's a great role for him. It's got to be better than The Crystal Skull. I mean, I'm sorry, it looks a hell of a lot better than The Crystal Skull or Hollywood Homicide or any of that shit. But I know that's not saying much.
If you haven't seen the trailer to this, check it out. It could be promising. I mean, but like Chris said, with the other trailer we played,
it does show everything.
Yeah, you do know the beats of the story, but these stories are basically pretty predictable to begin with. But these stories are usually run on the charm of the performers and maybe the snappy kind of dialogue. It's like what I've always said. It's a higher level version of Burt Reynolds switching channels.
Which was a lesser version of the Front Page?
Yeah, but I prefer to reference switching channels.
Of course, anything to get Bert in the show and Kathleen Turner.
There are movies this fall that I'm really intrigued by. I'm not totally intrigued by this movie, but as far as performances that I'm intrigued by this fall, this is probably towards the top of the list because it's been a while since he's done a flat-out comedy. He's done 6 days, seven nights in Hollywood Homicide, like Jerry said, and that was bullshit. It was an action movie masked as a comedy. This is a straight up comedy, so
yeah.
I'm very excited to see him do that again.
Mm-hmm. Also on that day, a movie called Unstoppable. The trailer came out to that a couple of weeks ago. It's a new Tony Scott film, so expect lots of freeze frames, jump cuts, and unnecessary titles. And it's another Tony Scott, Denzel Washington collaboration. Also, Chris Pine is thrown into the mix there.
Is this a sequel to Enemy of the State or something?
Runaway Train. Denzel Washington.
It's the caboose from The Taking of Pelham 1-2-3.
Oh, that's right. They did that. Yeah, that's it. How could I forget that?
That's right. Tony Scott's films, always energetic, always over-directed.
I like his movies. I like Taking a Pelham. I like Deja Vu. I like Enemy of the State. I like when they work together. They're solid.
Man on Fire. Man on Fire is the one I like the most of those.
Yeah. I mean, they're solid movies. They're not the best, but they're solid sevens, solid sevens, I would call those.
I like him. I like his movies, too. I mean, I've seen all of them. And I'm never bored by them. I'm always fascinated by the visuals. I mean, Spy Game is just, it's directed by an ADD kid, But
got to say that some of them are better
style
than Ridley.
He has style overkill.
Yeah.
I also like how he doesn't even try to write female characters like his brother does. He doesn't even give it a shot. Like, and when he does, it's a whore like Alabama in True Romance.
Or Domino.
Yeah, there you go. Well, that's an exception. That's a good one.
Yeah, I do like Domino.
All right, November 19th, the following week, Harry Potter at the Deathly Hallows Part 1. I don't know if that all can fit on a marquee, but all that matters is Harry Potter and people show up.
Yeah, no, that should be good. That should be really
myself included.
What was the response from the screening, Jerry? Did you?
Oh, I didn't know. I think maybe Dean might have heard the response. I didn't know anything about a screening. I know someone in our chat room had mentioned something, but I don't.
We talked about it the other week, and I asked you why would they screen Harry Potter? Everybody knows about it already. They're going to see it whether it's good or not.
They have been screening, but there was, I know. Oh, I think what I was saying was that someone, I think Amy Cool News had posted set pictures of the last day of shooting or something, And, like, if they said don't look at the photos if you haven't read the book because it gives away the ending of the movie. I'm like, well, you know, the book's been out there for a couple of years now. People aren't going to know the ending, so, I mean.
Like, anyone that gives a shit
knows. Either way, they say it's very good.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I've heard. And you're excited, Chris. You're a big Harry Potter fan.
I've said many times on this show that I was never interested in the Harry Potter books or the Harry Potter movies. Until I married a woman who is very interested in the Harry Potter books and movies. So I have been forced to watch them, and the movies have literally gotten progressively better with each movie to the point where I probably would put the last movie at the top of my list for last year. I mean, those are really, the last three or so of these movies have been really solid adventure movies.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
It's rare that a series gets better as the film goes on, and this is the case with these. They get better and better.
Yeah.
Also on that day, the next 3 days. I don't know if I like that title, but it's the new Paul Haggis movie. What's
great
unique
trailer.
About this? Yeah, it is a good trailer. What's unique about this is it seems like such a different project for Paul Haggis. I didn't like Crash. I loved In the Valley of Ella. Mostly because Tommy Lee Jones.
Right.
This one is like an action kind of thriller movie where his wife is imprisoned and you know, he stakes everything and the future of his family and everything on trying to bust her out of prison. Russell Crowe is in it. Olivia Wilde, Elizabeth Banks, Brian Dennehy. Brian Dennehy, look at there.
All right.
Hell yeah.
RZA, it's his second movie that he's in this fall.
RZA.
I'm sorry. I thought it was RZA.
Somebody's not a Wu-Tang fan.
Yeah, I know. And and Liam Neeson is in it.
What part does Liam Neeson play?
I'm guessing the tall, intelligent British dude.
Okay, there you go. That's a fair assessment. Okay.
he's the guy that broke out of that prison himself, and he's telling Russell Crowe how to go about it.
Ah, okay, good. That's a good part
from
watching
the trailer. I mean, he's majorly featured in the trailer. It looks like a major role. I don't think it is, though. I just think he gives essential information on understanding the stakes of the movie, so they put him in the trailer.
The trailer is really, really well made. It's one of those that gives enough information and sort of teases the big action of the movie but doesn't give away a hell of a lot. I really like the trailer.
Yeah, it's a good one. I was surprised by it when I watched it last week. I'm trying to get to my page here to see the next week, which is Thanksgiving week, November 26th, right? Mm-hmm. Friday, November 26th. Maybe there, and it doesn't.
Or is it
like
November 24th? Is it?
No, Thanksgiving's always on a Thursday.
Right. But isn't all the movies come out on a Wednesday though?
Oh, do they? Maybe I'm looking on the wrong day. Hang on. One moment, please. Hang on. My computer is so slow. There's a movie from Tom Hopper called The King's Speech.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, The King's getting good buzz.
Yeah, I really want to see that.
Tell me about it, Chris.
Well, I don't know the details. Basically, it's about some king who has a speech impediment, and he has to go to a linguist played by Jeffrey Rush. Colin Firth plays the king. What's interesting about it, besides those two actors, who I love, both of them, but it's Tom Hopper, who did the Elizabeth movie, and more importantly, he made the John Adams miniseries, which is just pound for pound. I would put that up against, you know, something like Band of Brothers or something, literally.
No, you're right.
I think it's one of the best miniseries ever made, and I just watched it for the second time, and it just, like, blows me away how well that movie's made. So that's why I'm more interested in The King's Speech.
Right.
Really
Tom Hooper is a good...
Yeah, Hot Hooper. Good.
November 24th, which is the Wednesday prior to Thanksgiving, we have a couple of interesting movies. Couldn't be more different. The Rock. Dwayne Johnson actually comes back as an action star in a movie called Faster, which is good. I'm tired of seeing him changing diapers for comedy in movies. And he plays an ex-con who sets out to avenge his brother's death. You know, it's that kind of story. But, you know, it should be badass, kick-ass picnic.
And it's a good trailer, so.
Yeah.
Billy Bob Thornton in another supporting role that seems like it's really not worth his
It's a paycheck.
What is up with that? This guy wrote and directed and was the main performer in, I would say, one of the best 10 movies of the last 30 years. And he has continued to take these little supporting parts. Was he just completely disillusioned by his experience on All the Pretty Horses? That's all I can think, because that seems to be the cutoff line. And after that, he really has made a lot of Bruckheimer movies.
It's what we talked about with Robert Duvall. I mean, Robert Duvall looked at a Billy Bob Thornton script and said it's one of the best things he's ever read, and said that he can't get the money for it. So, I mean, so maybe that explains why he's taking paycheck roles, too, which he'll be the first one to tell you. I did Eagle Eye for the paycheck. It was a good paycheck, which, you know, there might maybe no shame in that. I mean, he's an actor. He has to work.
He's got
to
eat, so, I mean,
I'd just like to see a couple more Sting Blades and a couple more, although I don't like it, but Bad Santas. I mean, like, he's played that Eagle Eye part and this faster part. Like, I don't know. It just, I would really love to see him get back to what he does best, playing interesting characters. Maybe I'm judging this movie a little too soon, you know? I don't know.
Some of the smaller movies he made in the last decade, like Levity and Crystal, and those, like, these are really small movies I'm talking about. Yeah. I mean,
and he did a lot of really interesting off-the-wall characters. He was like a hillbilly Nicolas Cage, like how Nicolas Cage, before he went all mainstream at the beginning of his career. Yeah. I mean, he did some interesting stuff. So you're right. I hope he does take risks. I think he will in that director capacity. If he gets the opportunity to.
And Daddy and Them, but that was from the last, that was from the 90s, I think, and just was on the shelf for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Also on that day is Love and Other Drugs, which we've discussed before. Mm-hmm. The trailer for that just came out a couple of weeks ago. The buzz on it is really good. It's the new Edward Zwick movie. Really notable because they say that Anne Hathaway is a front runner for a Best Actress Oscar for this film.
Yeah,
which surprises me, because the film is it looks like a romantic kind of comedy, like a typical kind of romantic comedy.
Mm-hmm. So I got to say, it sort of does in the trailer. I mean,
yeah,
I don't
except
know
it's Ed Zwick. Zwick, and he doesn't make typical comedies. Period. I think the last comedy he made was probably About Last Night, and that was in like 1985 or something like that.
So you think it has like a Civil War subplot or something?
No, I just mean it's him, so it's got to have some kind of hard edge to it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, we'll see.
And I don't mean that because it's about Viagra.
That's true.
No, that's good.
True.
That's good. I'm trying to think that they're really saying she. I mean, she's obviously a good actress, like Rachel Getting Married and everything. But that's what the front that performance is considered the front runner this year. Okay,
I've read that in many places, like respected. Respected journalists have said she will actually win.
Of the four main performers in Brokeback Mountain, she was the only one that did not get a nomination. In my opinion, she did every bit as good a job as Michelle Williams did in that movie. So maybe she's a little bit overdue. I don't even know if she's ever been nominated before. Nothing springs to mind.
For Rachel.
Has she? Yeah. Oh, that's right.
Yeah,
that's
Rachel
right.
Getting Married,
Yeah, great performance. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
So I believe it, you know. I mean, I really like her.
She's a great actress.
She can take what looks like a regular romantic comedy and make it into a Oscar performance.
Yeah.
Okay, no.
Also on that day, it seems like a new trend that they release a musical on Thanksgiving.
Oh, you're talking about Burlesque?
Yeah.
Ugh.
Or did Nine come out Christmas Day?
That came out Christmas Day, but...
Well, the holidays, let's celebrate with a musical. But this
with
the,
Cher.
Burlesque does not look like The Sound of Music. It's Christina Aguilera, not Christina Applegate, excuse me.
That would be better, man.
And Cher. I mean, Christina Aguilera has, like, a phenomenal voice, you know. But I saw the trailer to it, and the most that I can say is if you're gay, you're probably going to love it.
Yeah. Cher, ironically, does not have anything that she needs to share with the rest of the world. She's a little bit old for this kind of thing. And you know what? We don't want to see Cher movies anymore. And if you're going to make a share, as this is me anyway, I should say, I don't want to see share movies anymore. And if you are going to make a share movie, don't try and spice it up with Christina Aguilera. That's not a sweetener that's going to get me into the theater. You know? Like,
not a sweetener. also on Thanksgiving, and this can actually be really popular on a day like Thanksgiving weekend. The Nutcracker in 3D. I just wanted to mention that.
We already talked about Jackass.
Yeah.
But I can imagine that being the movie that they take the kids to.
Is Robert Zemeckis directing that?
No.
Okay.
No, it's a 13-syllable Russian name that I'm not going to attempt.
Okay.
Wednesday, December 1st, we finally get a look at Darren Aronofsky's Black Swan. New York Film Festival
audiences
will get the first look at it in Toronto.
Some early reviews of that came out today, actually.
Yeah, I've been reading them, and you know who they compare it to? They compare it to De Palma in a couple that I've read.
Yeah, and he says that this is his companion piece to The Wrestler.
Yeah, I read that, yeah.
Yeah.
So we feel good about it?
I do.
I think the trailer's fantastic. I know you guys were talking about it a couple weeks ago. I don't think I was involved in the conversation, but I think it looks really, really interesting, and Darren Aronofsky, you know, even when he misfires, like The Fountain, it's still really interesting to watch for 2 hours. So I'll watch a Darren Aronofsky misfire at worst.
Yeah. You know, Winona Ryder's in it, too.
What part does she play? I don't remember seeing her in the trailer, so
I couldn't tell you. I didn't see her in the trailer either.
Is in the trailer for like a flash, just a flash in the trailer.
Okay.
She flashes in the trailer? I gotta take a look at it. Friday the 3rd, so that's Wednesday the 1st that Black Swan opens. Friday the 3rd of December. We finally see a theatrical release for I Love You, Philip Morris.
Yeah, but how wide? No pun intended.
How wide?
This is a brave, daring movie, particularly in its first hour.
I love this movie.
Yeah, Chris and I have seen it. We talked about it. It's Jim Carrey as you've never seen him before. It's very funny.
Yeah. He's at his best. And he really is at some parts, and it is a flawed movie. Do not get me wrong. And I think you feel the same way, Jamie. A very flawed movie, but Jim Carrey is, like, firing on all cylinders. He is blasting all barrels, sometimes literally, at the screen. and, I mean, it's like you've never seen him before. It's one of his best performances. It's worth it to see just for... Some people don't like Jim Carrey, but if you've ever liked a Jim Carrey performance, you should see this movie because he's got something for you. And you might want to bring a handkerchief because
it might hit you in the eye.
It might hit you right in the eye.
Also on that day, on that Friday, the first week of December, a movie called Mural, which is the new Julian Schnabel movie, and it stars Willem Dafoe. It's a drama centered on an orphan Palestinian girl growing up in the wake of the first Arab-Israeli war, who finds herself drawn into the conflict. So this is a war film from Julian Schnabel, who is infamous for being a very meticulous, demanding art filmmaker.
Well, that too.
Did you see the 60-minute piece with him?
Is Vincent Gallo in this?
I did see this. It's Vincent Gallo in it. Hang on.
Get artier? Like, how could we make our movie artier? We'll get Vincent Gallo.
I'm sorry. He might have directed one that, you know, he's a similar movie about this, but he's at, right now, what's the, Venice or whatever, you know, he's got something,
Toronto.
Two films, a short film and
is
a...
Is it Toronto or Venice going on? Venice is going on now.
Venice. See, he's got two films, a short film and a longer film.
He's part of it. But Schnabel, I did see that 60 Minutes piece on him.
Wow. This guy takes himself and his art seriously. So I like his movies. I like The Diamond Bell and the Butterfly. I like Basquiat. So I'll see this. I probably won't get a chance to see it in the theater here, but I'll definitely be renting it on DVD when it comes around. He's a he's an original. I like that. You know, he seems like a total asshole, but I like he's an original, and I like his movies. So, you know, I'll see it.
Yeah. I'm looking for if there's any other highlights from that day, and there really aren't.
Yeah, the first week of December is, you know, very low-key.
Yeah. On Friday, December 10th, we have another Chronicles of Narnia.
In 3D.
Yeah.
Is it in 3D?
Yeah.
Why wouldn't it be, really?
Yeah. Great article with James Cameron about 3D the other day. Did anyone
read
that?
Yeah.
Great. Well, it's not just about 3D.
Is that a 3D thing?
Yeah, he shits on Piranha a little bit in that article, but that was the thing that got the buzz. The interview in itself is just a really good interview, and he's just always such a great forthcoming sort of guy in interviews, and we certainly learned that recently. But it was a great print interview with him.
It really was. It was my favorite among it was my favorite among the interviews, the latest crop of interviews beyond the one we did. But actually, did you read the retort? Did you read the...
I did.
12-word retort from producer Mark Canton?
I started reading it, and I sort of dozed off. Because, you know what? I agree with Canton. He's got a point, and Cameron shouldn't crap on the little guy. It's just that one of these guys has a track record that I will read 1,200 words if he writes them, and the other one does not have a track record that I will read 1,200. So, you know, good for Mark Canton. Good for him for firing back, and I think he's right. But I also think that James Cameron was right. Those kind of movies, even if Piranha 3D is fun, it's the kind of thing, it's not the kind of 3D that James Cameron's making, and I don't think it's the kind of 3D that Spielberg is trying to make and the Scorsese is trying to make. You know, when our gods of filmmaking, and those three are as close as we come to that, when they take it very, very seriously, I feel like everybody else should maybe take it very, very seriously. So,
yeah.
And it's also interesting his take on this whole 3D conversion thing, because Cameron is saying it can be done in a way that makes it look as good as movies that are shot in 3D if you do it right. And this Titanic re-release is going to be the gold standard, according to him. Not to get off subject,
right.
But it was a great interview. Back to the Narnia thing, who gives a shit? Didn't
they stopped, yeah, I mean, people didn't go see the second one, so, I mean...
I mean, this thing tanked in the United States. The thing is, it made money overseas, I think, and it made money on DVD, so they're just going to keep shitting these things out. And I could not...
Isn't it so much money, though, to take that... Okay, because it made money overseas. It's a lot of money to make these things. And
it doesn't matter. It made money. It made money overseas, and it made money on DVD. You know, Kick-Ass was a big disaster in the theater, but it made a lot of money on DVD, so they greenlit a sequel. DVD, we just don't get the sort of numbers in Variety and on Hollywood Reporter about DVD sales, but these things make sometimes as much, if not more money than they made in the theatrical run. We just don't hear about it.
Also, the on-demand.
On demand, too,
is something we got to take very seriously, because that's a lot of people just say, I'll wait till it comes on demand or it's on the Netflix that I can watch on my computer or something. So,
but even when the most popular movies, international grosses are 2 to 3 times more than the American.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's very true.
It's big business. I mean,
yeah,
America
that's why we're
makes,
getting it.
Makes movies for the world. It's a big import, export, rather. Also on that day is The Tempest, a really interesting movie that we're going to hear about also, because it's premiering at the New York Film Festival, from Julie Taymor, Helen Mirren. It's a kind of just like, what was the thing, Titus? It's a kind of a bent on Shakespeare, a unique bent. I mean, they changed the gender of the lead character for Helen Mirren. So.
Yeah.
So that'll be a visual feast, like all of her movies, but we'll see how good it is. Also on that day, two other movies. The Tourist, which I know they expect big things from because it pairs Angelina Jolie and Johnny Depp for the first time.
Who directed that, by the way? Do we know?
Yes, I can tell you.
Because, the thing is, we've had lots of pairings in the past.
Oh, I cannot tell you. Florian Henkel von Dahmer Schmack.
Oh, from the lives of others.
Dahmer Schmack.
No. I was going to say that that was Diane Kruger's character in Inglourious Basterds.
No, but it's a, oh well, they okay. So is this going to be? So I take it this is going to be a serious film because The Lives of Others is as serious as you can get. So I
it's
mean,
it's a thriller.
Okay.
It's about an American tourist visiting Italy, who crosses a path with an extraordinary woman, and I guess thrilling things happen from there on out.
You know, I'm sure they said the same thing. They thought the same thing about Night and Day when they're going, you know. I mean, I just, I don't know. This could be great
right.
or it could be awful. I mean, and Night and Day was somewhere in between, I felt. I mean, it had some good parts to it. But on the whole, you know, it's you know.
Yeah, well, you don't even have to make that kind of comparison. Johnny Depp and Angelina Jolie, although they are huge stars, have both made their fair share
mm-hmm.
of clunkers in the past couple of years. You know, I mean, it's putting them together does not, it's not exactly 1 + 1 = 2.
Yeah, it's
time,
not a sure
so.
Thing at all.
Yeah.
That's the thing, you know, as much as I like Salt, that's, you know, we're only talking about Angelina Jolie is only really in the last couple of years, like, found, like, some sort of grounding in motion pictures. But that's
yeah.
just at least a phenomenon.
Tomb Raider, yeah.
It's hard for us to judge, too. Again, no trailer on this one, so it's
yeah.
hard to sort of get a feel of what it's like.
Yeah. Also on that day, David O. Russell's new film, The Fighter.
Hell yeah.
Christian
I
Bale
to
and Mark
be
Wahlberg.
On the set of this movie.
Yeah. This one's really, really high up on my anticipation
mm-hmm.
list. They've tried to get this. I mean, Aronofsky was attached to this for a while. I think
yeah.
Matt Damon was attached to the Christian Bale part. Brad Pitt was attached to the
mm-hmm.
Christian Bale part. They've been trying to get this movie made for a long time. It's
mm-hmm.
a great story, and I love David O. Russell. I love Wahlberg. I love Christian Bale. Looks really, really interesting on paper. Again, what's up with the trailer? We should be getting it pretty soon, but
mm-hmm.
this is really high on my anticipation list.
Oh, yeah, yeah, without a doubt.
And a David O. Russell film that got completed, and that I haven't heard any bad reports on the set from it.
I know, so Bale and O. Russell together at last. I mean...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
maybe it's one of those things where you put out, like, an oil fire with dynamite or something
yeah.
like that. Like, they're just too explosive for there to be any explosions, you know?
You're right, right. December 17th, the following Friday, I think is the biggie. It's not necessarily one I'm most looking forward to. It's actually not, but I think it's the one that most people have flocked to.
Mm-hmm.
And that's Tron Legacy, which, you know, you see the release date, December 17th, it's the Avatar date, December 19th.
Mm-hmm.
It's another movie that promises to be another leap forward, state-of-the-art, another movie shot for 3D, you know, cutting-edge special effects, Jeff Bridges. Are we impressed by the new trailer for it?
I haven't seen the new trailer for
I
it.
I haven't seen
but
a new trailer, no.
I was impressed by the original trailer
yeah.
for it. But the one thing, everything looks good on this movie, except for, I will say two things. First of all, I saw the original Tron recently again, and time has not been kind to the original Tron.
Yeah, I heard that you've been there.
Secondly, the director is sort of an unknown as far as this caliber of movie goes.
Right.
He's just sort of untested, and we've sort of seen this sort of thing before. Where everything looks good on paper, everything looks good with the trailer, but when it comes to the final product, people just aren't having it. Although I don't think that's going to be the case with this one because I've been there in the theater when the trailer played, and it's palpable. People are digging it. And it looks cool. It looks very, very cool. And even if they don't remember the original Tron, they're sort of digging this whole, wow, this guy's been lost in the system for 30 years, and
mm-hmm.
now he's coming back, and his son, and the light cyber races, and all this kind of stuff.
Are we impressed by the young Jeff Bridges, what they did with him, the Benjamin Bates?
I have not seen that. I haven't seen the new trailer, though.
Yeah,
I
haven't
know.
Seen the new trailer either.
What, are you impressed with it, or you?
Looks a little weird. I mean, it doesn't...
Yeah.
Like,
it doesn't look all there. I mean,
is it like Anthony Hopkins in Red Dragon kind of weird?
It,
or
it looks like the goofy face that Jeff Bridges always wore that works so well in Starman.
Starman,
it looks like,
yeah.
It looks like that with, like, a lot of extra foundation makeup.
See, that's how I felt about Benjamin Button with the young effects with Brad Pitt. It seemed like way too much. It looked like a lot of makeup, you know?
Yeah.
So I wonder if they'll have that same problem. You know what's weird is this effect was done the best, probably, in a movie that totally sucked, which was X-Men The Last Stand. Like, they made Magneto and Professor Xavier, Patrick Stewart and... look really, really young, and they totally pulled it off in this movie. Yet Fincher, in my opinion, was not able to do it 100% in Benjamin Button, the much younger actor, and you seem to be saying that it doesn't quite work with Tron 2, although I'm sure they're not done with those effects.
Yeah, as we announced a few weeks ago on the show, they actually brought in the Pixar story people to look at a rough cut of the film and consult on how they could make the story stronger.
Mm, maybe they need to bring in Ratner, because he seemed to be good at doing that whole make old dudes look young thing.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying it's a complete disaster. I mean, it's good enough. But, I mean, this is Tron, and everything else about it looks so impressive from a visual standpoint. I don't think good enough cuts it, but...
From what I understand, that this younger character, this sort of avatar, Jeff Bridges' character, is sort of, plays kind of a big part. It's not like a cameo thing. Like, he's kind of involved in the story, sort of integral to the story. So,
if anything, the older Jeff Bridges plays the smaller part. It looks like from the trailer. Yeah.
Right.
We don't need to talk about it because we talked about James L. Brooks at length
in
the last shows that we did together. But how do you know the new James L. Brooks movie with Paul Rudd, Reese Witherspoon, and Jack Nicholson and Owen Wilson opens on that day, too. It's vying to be a big romantic comedy, but it really looks dull from the trailer, which is very surprising coming from James L. Brooks.
Yeah.
But there's a Yogi Bear movie that comes out that day. We haven't seen a big screen Yogi Bear yet.
Oh, Jesus. No, we haven't.
You can't discount that, dude. I mean, in terms of what audiences are going to flock to.
Yeah, look at Alvin and his chipmunks. I mean...
I'm sure they will flock to it. And thank God somebody's given Timberlake something to do. That fucking guy's about to fade into nowhere. Jesus.
Timberlake?
Yeah. Timberlake plays the voice.
Oh, he plays
Yogi. Yeah, he's the voice of Yogi. I'm being a little sarcastic there. Timberlake's fucking everywhere.
Yeah, wow, he's the voice of Yogi Bear? What is it with these guys?
No. He's the voice of Boo Boo. And...
That's what I mean. Boo-boo, yeah.
Dan Aykroyd is the voice of Yogi, which automatically means I'm not going to see it.
Right. Well, that's the thing. Could you get one guy that's more of right now and one guy that's more of 25 years ago than Dan Aykroyd and Justin Timberlake, you know?
Yeah, that's an odd pair.
I didn't realize Dan Aykroyd, he thought what Bill Murray did with Garfield was such a good idea? I mean...
Well, it's weird. He must do a really good job doing a Yogi voice or something, because why would they go with Aykroyd? You know, it's probably some no-name voiceover guy who can do a really good Yogi, but Aykroyd must be doing something that they like.
Yeah, okay.
This is a big tentpole sort of production. And you're right. People are going to flock to this shit, I'll bet, just like they do with the Chipmunks movies.
Mm-hmm.
Again, not for me, so...
The new Alejandro Iñárritu film, Beautiful, opens up on that day, too, in limited release, which has gotten a lot of buzz because they say Javier Bardem is phenomenal in it, in the lead role. So it's a Spanish-language film. I would basically think that you can expect nominations for that film, the kind of word of mouth I've heard on it.
I hope it's a little bit different. Does anyone else feel that way about Iñárritu? Does anyone else feel like he's made three movies that are very, very similar, and I'd sort of like to see him do something else? And I actually would go out on a limb and sort of say the same thing about Javier Bardem. I feel like this guy is like becoming the Spanish Sean Penn, and he needs to make a Sweet and Lowdown or a Fast Times at Ridgemont High in order to get, you know, like he's a little bit too serious for me. Like,
he's like
else.
The brooding, smoldering Spaniard.
But I like him. I love it. I'd just like to see him try something else too, you know.
Yeah.
I would love
Gulliver's
to see John
Travels
in another comedy.
You'd like to see me too.
Yeah.
Gulliver's Travels opens up December 22nd, which is a Wednesday. I don't know what to expect from it. It's Jack Black, Emily Blunt, Amanda Peet. I mean, it's a
feels like it should have been made 4 years ago.
Yeah, it already seems old-fashioned. Hasn't
yeah.
even come out yet. But Little Fockers comes out that day, too.
Oh, boy.
Not great buzz on this movie.
No.
Not a lot of great buzz.
Especially, as we were saying the other day, when you go back for extensive reshoots after it's all closed
mm-hmm.
with a new actor to the cast, which was Dustin Hoffman.
Yeah. Like, that's the production saying, wow, this movie doesn't need touches. This movie needs a lot.
Yeah.
That's to me, that says something about this movie does not work. And it was sort of, you know, I mean, the first Meet the Parents movie was very memorable. Second one was less so. This
yeah.
is a part three. Can't we sort of expect that this is just not going to be very good, I'm thinking. And, you know, we got a director change, and, you know, Chris Weitz he's a workman-like director, but he's, in my opinion, not done anything that was too terribly memorable. I don't know.
Well,
I don't have good feelings about this movie.
Maybe it'll be popular. I mean, it's the only huge kind of, and I guess it's a family kind of film opening. Well, no, Little Fockers. Little Fockers is what people will flock to.
Yeah, I have no doubt that it will be popular. I just wonder if it'll be funny or not.
Oh, I was thinking, yeah. But 2 days later, the day before Christmas on Friday, we have the new Sofia Coppola movie Somewhere, which
that
we're going to
hear.
We're going to hear a lot about it because
mm-hmm.
it's about to screen
mm-hmm.
at Venice.
Yeah.
Any day now.
I have a feeling people are going to be heavily comparing this movie to Lost in Translation, which is unfortunate. And unfortunate just because the comparison, I think, will be made. You know, I mean, it's sort of a celebrity that's sort of floating and lost, and he's in a hotel, and
mm-hmm.
a younger person comes into his life and sort of makes him see. I have no doubt that it's going to be an interesting movie because I love all her movies.
Yeah.
I love The Virgin Suicides. I love Lost in Translation. And I am one of a very small group of people that loves Marie Antoinette.
That's a beautiful, fantastic, trippy movie.
It's fantastic. She's a really good director. So
mm-hmm.
I'm just fearful that people are going to label this sort of the same, and I doubt that she is the kind of director that's going to make the same thing twice.
No, but it's when you bring that up, and in the Entertainment Weekly, that's the mm-hmm. first thing they talk about when they talk about Somewhere is Lost in Translation. So, you know, yeah, people are making it already, the analogy, the comparison.
Well, and it's a lead role for Stephen Dorff in a movie getting a wide release,
mm-hmm.
too, which is good.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I was
which
never
interesting.
You,
I don't know
Stephen
good.
It is interesting. Yeah, it is interesting. Stephen Dorff is not one of those guys. Other than the movie A Power of One, which is literally like 21 years old or something like that.
I think it's
from
20 years ago. Yeah.
You know, like, but other than that, I was never hugely blown away by Stephen Dorff, so.
I liked him in City of Industry. That was good, but that's like 15 years ago, but.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a comeback performance. Who knows? It could be this year's comeback performance. But Sofia Coppola is the person that interests me about
mm-hmm.
this.
Yeah. On Saturday, Christmas Day, we got, actually Chris and I were talking about this. Our top two most anticipated movies of the year were the rest of the year, Social Network and this film, True Grit.
Mm-hmm.
Coen Brothers.
Hell yeah.
True Grit. Starring Jeff Bridges.
Yeah.
I saw set photos of it, and it was so odd seeing Jeff Bridges with the long beard and period costume, and he was being greeted by tourists, and he was signing autographs and stuff. It's like the collision of different realities, those set photos. But apparently different from the original film.
Very different.
To be made more loyal to the book.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just recently read the book because I found out the Coen brothers were making it, and that the book was very, very different. And I was never a big fan of the original John Wayne movie, so I went back and read the book, and it's a good book. It's solid. It seems to me very similar to the movie with John Wayne, but the dialogue is the one thing that's very different, and obviously
yeah.
that's something that the Coens key in on,
mm-hmm.
dialogue, especially when it comes to source material, certainly in the case of, you know, No Country for Old Men. and I'm really, really excited to see what they're going to do with what is a pretty good book. And Jeff Bridges, Matt Damon,
Josh Brolin.
Barry Pepper, Josh Brolin. It looks really, really interesting. Another one that I'm dying to see a trailer for.
It's a movie where the lead girl, the lead teenage girl that they cast, is the essential component.
Right.
They've cast a relative unknown, and they've only released one still of it. I don't know. I can't tell much from that, but it's probably going to be a great Coen Brothers discovery, this girl.
Mm-hmm. I think so. It's such an essential part of the book and the original movie too. But I would predict possible nominations if the Coens settled on her for a part like this. It's really a meaty part, and I would not doubt that she might end up getting some nominations for this thing because it's a book that made me laugh out loud actually several times.
Yeah. Another Sam Worthington movie opens on the Wednesday after, 28th.
Mm-hmm.
It's directed by John Madden. It also co-stars Tom Wilkinson and Helen Mirren.
Mm-hmm.
It's called The Debt, about three young Israeli agents on a secret mission who capture and kill a notorious Nazi war criminal.
It's a good trailer. I've seen the trailer.
All the trailer's out?
There is a trailer.
It doesn't look like Captain Corelli's Mandolin?
No, it's definitely not Captain Corelli's Mandolin, which is a great book and just a bad movie. if you can make it through the movie, But no, this is definitely looks worthwhile. I'm very curious to see how it plays out.
Yeah.
I saw the trailer in front of the American today, and I gotta say, I do not
How was the American?
I found the trailer to be very, very dull. I was not that into it. I don't know. Sam Worthington is intriguing. So is Tom Wilkinson. So is Helen Mirren. So is Cyrion Hines, who I like a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. Didn't do it for me.
No.
Where did you see The American?
Yeah.
What's that?
When did you see The American? Was this advanced screening?
No, it comes out today.
No,
it opened today.
It came out today.
Oh.
Is it good
I went on a whim. It was one of those things. I didn't want to see The American, but maybe once every 3 years I go to the movies with no movie in mind to see. When I go to the movies, it's usually I'm going to see this. But today I just sort of stopped by. I had some time. My wife was working. I was like, maybe I'll go to the movie. It was the only movie I sort of narrowed it down, movies that she didn't want to see that I would see that might include something I'd like to see. And I felt like, Clooney... Clooney, a sniper, a chance of some titties, so I'll go see that. And actually, I thought it was really, really an interesting movie. I was completely wrong. I thought it was going to be boring and just like a lot of other stuff I'd seen. It was really, really an interesting, it's also sort of an interestingly placed movie because it falls right in between summer and fall. And that's sort of how the movie feels because it's got like a summer plot. But it's got a fall feel to it.
Right.
And that works really well. Movie is very, very European and is not going to work well with American audiences.
I can't wait to see it. Mm-hmm.
I can promise you that Americans will hate this thing. In fact, I heard a couple chuckles when it ended, on a very European note.
Mm-hmm.
But I found it very, very enjoyable and intriguing, and I enjoyed the hell out of watching it.
Well, that's good. That's good to hear. We're supposed to check it out tomorrow, so yeah. No, that's good to hear.
Yeah, I believe that you will like it very much.
Okay, cool.
The last day of the year, Friday, December 31st, for New Year's Eve, you got a pretty artsy bunch. But New Year's Eve is never a big movie-going night.
But
no.
New Year's Day, though, I'm sure.
Yeah, yeah. But they'll all go back to the...
So the Christmas
so
release, Yogi Bear.
Yeah, I mean there are like seven movies opening up Christmas, so I'm sure they'll have plenty to choose from still. But another year, the new Mike Lee movie.
Mm-hmm. That's gotten great word of mouth.
Yeah. Opens up that day, and then Soda's in limited release, Blue Valentine, another Sundance movie. That looks interesting. I mean, it could be a complete and total bore, or it could be really involving and interesting. It's Ryan Gosling and Michelle Williams.
Doug's good word of mouth at Sundance, right, this year? That was a Sundance
movie.
Yeah, this is like the relationship that you sort of see blossoming and then sort of falling apart.
Mm-hmm.
Like the drama version of 500 Days of Summer.
It's perfect, yeah.
Where everybody's hopes are dashed, or they try to make new resolutions for themselves. So that's the rest of the year, guys. I mean, next month, September is this month actually.
Yeah, Wall Street and
I'm in a coma lately. Wall Street 2 at the end of the month. Did you guys see the Michael Douglas David Letterman interview from last night?
Yeah, stage 4 throat cancer. Not a good diagnosis.
No.
It's a fascinating interview, though. It was a good interview.
Mm-hmm.
And,
yeah, Michael Douglas has one of those really unique voices that I've never heard anyone do a good impression of. It always seems like there should be someone that does a good Michael Douglas impression, except I've never heard one.
Yeah.
So the voice is going. I mean, the voice is going to...
Yeah.
Regardless, so this is going to be like what happened with Jack Hawkins, who had a magnificent, like, distinct speaking voice, and when his vocal cords were destroyed, I think it was throat cancer as well, you know, that's one of his most distinguishing characteristics. And this is just tragic to watch this unfold.
Yeah. And we're probably not going to see it unfold. I mean,
I think if that interview was any indication.
Yeah.
He's
going to be out of sight for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But, I mean, we're sounding so fatalistic about it. I mean, he's very optimistic. He says his doctors are very optimistic because it hasn't spread. But throat cancer is usually pretty damn aggressive.
Well, let me ask.
I also don't understand how it could have not spread, because stage 4 sort of means that it's spread.
Right.
Has his father said anything?
No, his father hasn't made a statement.
No, because his father wrote an op-ed.
Well, he can't. So.
No, he can write. You know, he wrote an op-ed piece for the Times a couple of years ago where he talked about the studios forced all the actors to smoke in the 30s and 40s and 50s, and, you know, how he basically, like, just killed everyone. So I'm surprised he hasn't made a statement.
I haven't read anything, but his father's a good thing to bring up, because, you know, talk about a fighter. I mean,
oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's in Michael Douglas's genes.
Yeah. Maybe not his son's genes, but definitely the Michael and Kirk, though.
Right, right.
Yeah. Well, he's got something to fight for, because the guy sleeps with Catherine Zeta-Jones every night.
Yeah.
So, you know,
yeah.
I'd be getting the chemo and radiation treatments with a smile on my face if I were him, too. So, you know. Great actor, one of a kind, and sort of ignored in the last couple years. I watched Wonder Boys recently. And I don't want to sound like we're doing a retrospective on his career, because he's about to die, but, man, Wonder Boy's great performance, great movie.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. He's just he's just kind of one of those guys that's not, there's no substitution for Michael Douglas. He's sort of like Tom Hanks in that way, although he hasn't been as high profile as Tom Hanks. There's no one quite like that. I can't imagine anyone else playing that Wonder Boy's part, or playing, you know, certainly the Gordon Gekko part, or, you know,
or
even Romancing the Stone. He's just sort of inimitable.
And nobody plays sleazy as charmingly as he does.
Yeah, like a solitary man. I thought he was good, and I also thought he was quite good as the eccentric in King of California.
Yeah.
Right, and also the vulnerable man that he played so famously in, like, the trilogy of Fatal Attraction, Basic Instinct, and Disclosure. Like,
mm-hmm.
sort of like these three high-profile sexual movies, like female dominant sexual movies, where he played the sort of vulnerable, submissive male,
mm-hmm.
and yet he still comes across as such a powerful male figure in this submissive role.
Mm-hmm.
Really interesting. Really sort of an interesting career he's had, actually.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I like it how you emphasize the word sexual in every sentence. Really powerful.
Well, he does. I mean, look. I mean, nobody's balled more chicks on screen than Michael Douglas, arguably. So, you know, good for him. And off screen, too, from what I understand.
Yeah.
Lily Jackson has been kicked from the chat room.
Yeah, I was going to say, dude, what the hell's up with that?
Yeah, I just
what's
gotta,
this? Just look in the chat room
about,
if you can.
A list
what's
of 100 most ugly transsexuals, which, first of all, any list with the title says most ugly. So she's gone. For those that aren't into transsexuals, I'm sure you're pleased. All right. That's it. That's year.
That is the rest of the year.
Pretty promising, I'd say. On the
I would
whole,
say there's
like,
some good ones. At least 10 there I want to see for sure. I mean,
yeah, and they're steady. They're not all in one month. There's a couple here, there's a couple there. We really didn't even talk about September, but really the only thing good in September, in my opinion, is The Town. So, and The American. Go out and see The American, but I'm interested in The Town also.
The Town looks like, for me, the big one, yeah.
Me too. Now, do the Oscar Oscar hopefuls look promising? Does it look like it's going to be another slim pickings year for a 10 Best Picture race?
Wow, yeah. 10, it's hard to say because we haven't even seen trailers for a lot of the Oscar hopefuls, let alone reviews. But, you know, I mean, there's always, sort of always can count on, you know, like the Mike Lee movie will get a nomination.
Yeah.
We'll get lots of nominations. Mike Lee movies always do. And Mike Lee movies sort of fall into what I call the Invictus category, which is I never want to see them, but when I do, I always like them.
Yeah.
I feel the same way.
Yeah, it also depends how far back they want to go. If they want to go back to the beginning of the year, you got Shutter Island and The Ghost Rider, and you got Greenberg, and those are all perfect films to put in that 10-picture category.
Yeah. I have a hard time believing that Greenberg.
Oh, Greenberg! They're not going to get. They're not going to. I'm just saying. I would have no problem putting it in there. I would, but I know they're not. But I would.
I would not be surprised if Ghost Rider or even Roman Polanski made it in a controversial vote. Some of those other earlier movies. There really hasn't been a hell of a lot in the earlier part of the year that I think will get nominated. I think we'll see a Toy Story 3 nomination.
Mm-hmm.
We might have, even if it weren't a 10-picture year, that might have been one of the animated movies that snuck into the five.
Yeah.
Certainly I think that Social Network is a big contender. I do think that King's Speech movie has everything that looks very Oscar-worthy on paper. Another one that we didn't talk about that, in my opinion, I think is going to be maybe one of the sleepers, certainly for the Academy, is the Mark Romanek movie. I think it's called
Never Let Me Go.
No, Never Let Me Go, based on a great book. Oh, no, we didn't talk about it. We talked about it a little bit a couple weeks ago, but no, I definitely think that is a surefire.
I feel like that's going to be the movie that's sort of going to have a big
sleeper.
Big sleeper vibe going on with it. So.
I know.
No,
I
there's a lot
in the trailer.
Oh, are you kidding me? I think it's a great trailer.
No, it's an awesome trailer.
I haven't watched the trailer. I was just making it.
Oh. The same writer from Remains of the Day.
Yeah, it's a great trailer. A very powerful trailer. So.
Yeah, I'm very interested in that.
Okay, that's the show. We're not back Sunday night because Monday through Friday next week, we have our Brian De Palma series every night at 10 p.m. Eastern. So we're probably going to miss announcing a landmark to you guys, which will happen this weekend when we will reach 1 million listeners.
Wow.
That's awesome. No, it's just incredible. 1 million listeners after, 3.5 years. It's incredible.
1 million different hits that have heard our voice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And 1,000 of those have actually been laid.
That's great. All right. Well, we love geeks anyway. Thank you for tuning in.
Thank you, and have a great weekend, guys.
I had a great time talking to you guys. I'll
right.
see you Monday night.
All right, see you Monday.
Yeah.
All right, bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
Thank you.